Tango Tango Papa 1926, October 17, 2015.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Carlisle, Pennsylvania. So let's see. I was in Omaha. I've kind of been back and forth. So I was in Omaha, it's a few days ago, and I was unloading there. And I don't know if I'd mentioned in the last podcast, I have been having problems with the fuel-fired heater for my truck to keep the bunk warm when the truck is parked and the motor's not idling, which is pretty much most of the time is parked, the motor is not idling. So, in any case, that bunk heater had been working. I've used it a little bit, and it was working, and then now it's not working. And so I ended up taking it to there's a company yard in Omaha, Nebraska. And so I took it there, and they were supposed to have fixed it, and then they did an A service, which is kind of, checking things around, checking over things and what have you. And so supposedly they fixed it, and it seemed to have gotten fixed, I guess. I didn't really test it. I guess I should have. But in any case, I didn't need it then that night after they fixed it. I didn't even bother turning it on. Of course, I picked the load up at outside of Omaha there at Council Bluffs, Iowa. And then that load, I brought it to Manchester, Pennsylvania. But, so that I picked the load up there at Council Bluffs. And then that evening, I made it over to Walcott, Iowa, which is over on the other side of the state, on the east side of the state along Interstate 80. Council Bluffs is on the extreme west side, just across the river from Omaha. So made it to Walcott, Iowa, and I discovered that, hey, this thing isn't working very well, and it really wasn't working at all, and so it got down, probably to about 40 degrees, which is a little cool to try to sleep without any kind of heat source. I have a sleeping bag that I use as a blanket, and it's not a very efficient sleeping bag, because one time years ago I ended up getting a sleeping bag that was too efficient. It had a rating that was too good. I forget what they'll rate them for, different temperature ranges. And I had one that was too efficient, and it wouldn't work in the truck as a blanket because I was getting too hot. So ever since then, whenever I occasionally have to buy a new sleeping bag, what I would do is get one that is not very efficient. So covering up with a sleeping bag, I was warm enough to sleep, but it was kind of uncomfortable, or it could be uncomfortable. So anyway, spent the night there at Walcott, and then I spent the night last night at one of the service plazas along the Ohio Turnpike, and it was about, maybe it was 38 degrees, and, so I survived, and, slept, probably about 5 hours, and which was, the last night, that was enough, and, So came, made it to Manchester, Pennsylvania, and did the drop and hook. And then I came to the company yard in New Kingston, Pennsylvania, which is in between Mechanicsburg and Carlisle. So in this area, it's all like one town, and you've got all these little towns that sort of are back-to-back in the greater Harrisburg area. So anyway, they sent me to the motel along with a couple of other drivers. And so hopefully they'll get to that tomorrow. It's supposed to get down to 28 degrees here tonight. Now, earlier when I was driving across, especially in northern Pennsylvania, this afternoon, it was actually sleeting in some areas. There was rain, kind of drizzle, and then sleet. It wasn't freezing. It was... I think the lowest temperature that I saw, and it was because I was probably a little bit higher elevation, it was 36, and then the rest of the time it was about 40 or so. And then once I got south of State College, Pennsylvania, it warmed up about 10 degrees, it was about 50 degrees or so. And I'm not sure what the temperature is right now, but it's not terrible, but it's cold, and earlier it was kind of windy, which made it a little bit worse. So I don't know if there could be some snow. I doubt that it sticks, or there could even be a little freezing rain, kind of depending. Now earlier, I don't know, a little over an hour ago, I walked, had to walk outside a little bit to get to, there's a restaurant next door to this motel, and you got to walk a little bit outside in between the buildings. And there was no precipitation at that point, and it was still about, I don't know, probably in the, I'd say we're in the, somewhere in the 40s, and no precipitation, so I'm not sure what it's doing now. So, oh well, I'm in the motel, and hopefully, as I say, they will get that fixed tomorrow. Apparently, they had more than one truck that had... fuel-fired heater problems. So that's, this time of year, that's kind of a common complaint. And with those, those are called ESPAR, ESPAR heaters, and they want you to run those in the summer about every 30 days to kind of keep them in shape. And I tried to do that. I did try to run it. It's kind of hot, you know, it was debatable whether the thing actually came on or not. Because let's say it's 90 degrees and you know, I try to crank that thing on and so that it would come on, I don't know that it, you know, and leave it on for a few minutes. I don't know that the thing actually did come on or not, but I tried running it, so, and it did work early on. There's been a couple of nights where it did get kind of cool. It was cool enough to run it, and it did seem to work, so... Not sure what happened, but anyway, I thought they had it fixed at Omaha, but I'm not sure, unless there's some kind of electrical problem, but I doubt it. I just don't know. So hopefully they'll get the thing working again, and it'll be it has to be reliable, because I have to have that in order to stay warm when the truck is parked, because the truck is set up so that it will not idle. It'll idle for about 5 minutes, and then it shuts down. And the only time that it'll idle longer than that is if it's trying to recharge the battery back up to whatever they have the thing set for. So, anyway, I have a... file here, a voice file from Joel, and I think, or he's kind of, I've already responded to him on Voxer, but anyway, I'll go ahead and play this, and I think he's kind of responding to the last podcast, and then the fact, you know, I bought this Microsoft Surface Pro 3, which I am still very happy with, by the way. And you know, this, I've written several, I don't know, since I got this thing, I've written about four, I think I've posted about four articles on Geek News Central, and it kind of primarily revolving around this purchase, you know, the kind of the form factor of the Surface Pro 3, and I don't know, it's interesting. Mac people, excuse me, of course I listen to a lot of Mac podcasts, and for whatever reason, the Apple podcasts tend to be a whole lot more interesting than, you know, there are Android podcasts, and there are also, you know, I guess there's some Windows podcasts, but that's almost non-existent, really. But there are Android podcasts, and the thing is, the Android podcasts, I think, one of the reasons they tend not to be as interesting is because they're all about reviewing new phones. It seems like that's all they ever talk about, really, is reviewing new phones, or reviewing this phone and reviewing that phone, and with the Apple podcasts, they're talking more about apps. And, of course, the apps, most of the apps are cross-platform that people are using today. So that I think that's why the Apple podcasts tend to be more interesting, is because they are talking about the apps more, a lot more so than the Android podcasts. As I say, with the Android podcasts, they're just reviewing... you know, there's a new phone from LG, or there's a new phone from Samsung, or there's a new phone from HTC, new phone from Motorola, a new phone from Huawei, etc., etc., etc. And I don't really care about that. New phone from OnePlus is another one. Don't care about that. Not so much. I don't really care about... these new phones being reviewed, you know, it's much more interesting and kind of entertaining and perhaps a little bit more useful if you talk about the apps and how you can use the phone and what uses you're putting to it. In any case, I don't know how I got off onto that tangent, but... but I do listen to a lot of the Apple podcasts, you know, and some of them have been talking about the Surface, and I think they're a lot of the Apple, you know, the fanboy types, and you know, and most of the ones that are doing the podcasting that have Apple podcasts could be considered fanboys. Some of them, you know, are more. Kind of more honest than are others, but as far as honest with themselves about Apple's shortcomings, and you know, in some cases, it's like they think Apple. It's almost like Apple can do no wrong, and you know, they're kind of worshiping at the, you know, at the Church of Apple. But they were. It's kind of interesting because those people. The podcasters have been sort of surprised, and they've talked about this Microsoft Surface, this announcement of the Surface Pro 4, and then this Microsoft Surface Book, the new laptop, the first laptop ever from Microsoft, and that has gotten some of them, it's kind of shook them up a little bit, and it's also, I've noticed that some of them want, it's almost like they want the touch interface. And, you know, they kind of talk around it. Of course, Apple has made fun of Microsoft for having, you know, trying to combine touch with a desktop interface. And, but of course, that's Apple just being, you know, because they've got two different tracks. You've got the OS X interface, which is the traditional OS X desktop interface, And then you've also got iOS, which is aimed at iPhones and iPods and iPads, and that's the two were split, and you know they're on two different tracks. One, the desktop version, runs real desktop type applications, and iOS, of course, runs apps just like Android runs apps. They're much lighter, and an app is really aimed at performing a different specific tasks, and you have specific apps for different tasks, as opposed to general purpose software that's not so narrowly focused in the realm of desktop software. And so some of these people, they seem to be kind of seeing the same thing that I saw, that I've been talking about in these articles, is the fact, you know, when I bought the first iPad, I discovered that the iPad, you know, and that's the iPad 2 that I gave to my parents, and they still use it every day. It still works great. What I found with the iPad is that it makes it a great consumption device. If you're doing, any kind of media consumption, the iPad 2 that I bought, the iPad Air that I bought after that, those things make great consumption devices. And I think this iPad Pro that is coming out maybe for sale towards the end of October or early November, but maybe about less than a month away on sale. I think since it's still an iPad and there's no Apple forbids any kind of a mouse or touchpad for use on an iPad with iOS, and so it's going to be a consumption device and not so much a production device. And I think I ended up buying into the hype because I got the original iPad, and I really did try to end up being productive with it. Use it as a podcast recording device, which I could, but I had to jump through lots of hoops in order to do it. And I think what I ended up thinking, or kind of buying into the hype, since the iPad Air had a faster processor, I thought, well, maybe I can use this as a more of a production device, or as a a productivity device. Type articles on it and what have you. And that turned out kind of not to be the case, even with the iPad Air, because I haven't had a very good experience with Bluetooth keyboards with the iPad for whatever reason. It seems, and I tried, I think, a total of three different keyboards, and it seems that with a Bluetooth keyboard on an iPad, even on an iPad Air, some of the keystrokes are ignored, and then there's other cases where you hit the key and you end up with a double strike. So you end up with two characters instead of one. And the other problem, typing on that size of a keyboard, it's a similar size to a netbook keyboard, and that size of a keyboard is too difficult to type on. It's too cramped. And it's got some weird key placements because the thing's smaller, and it's just not a pleasant typing experience, especially if it's going to ignore, if characters are going to be ignored or doubled. You got to keep backspacing and going back and fixing things, and it makes a terrible typing experience. So overall, after I bought the iPad 2, then I kind of figured out, well, this isn't a productivity device at all. And at the same time, I think that I was using, I was using the iPad as a consumption device, and I was using my different touchscreen phones as a consumption device. And over that period of time, I kind of got away from using my laptop, the laptop computers very much, either the Macs or the Windows machine that I have, the netbook machine that I have. Kind of quit using those very much because it was more of a clunky experience. There was no touch screen, primarily. And then, you know, of course, the laptop's kind of bigger and you got to, you know, have to dig it out of the laptop bag and plug it in so the battery wouldn't go dead. And it became easy over time to kind of end up procrastinating. And not, you know, because there were times when I would think, well, I'd have an idea for an article to write or whatever, and I just wouldn't do it because it was kind of easy to just procrastinate. And since those computers weren't that great of an experience, I ended up, I think the iPad and these touchscreen devices, my phones, my Android phones, those were such a much better computing experience as far as the consuming media, that kind of caused me to procrastinate and not use the laptop computers as much. So what I'm finding with the Surface Pro 3 is that it's obviously, it's a much smaller device. I'm going to have to move that Verizon Air card. Is just really becoming annoying for whatever reason. It's going crazy. And I need to, I'm going to have to stop this and either turn it completely off or move it into the other room. Because right now it's about a foot away from my USB sound card and it's just too... Maybe if I'd move that. That seemed to help. I moved it away a little bit. So anyway, the touchscreen interface on the smaller devices was kind of helping me to procrastinate from using those older laptops. And I really did kind of quit using them very much. The only time I'd use them basically is to record a podcast with. So what I'm finding is with the Surface Pro 3, it's a full computer. Oh, there it goes again. It's a full computer, and but it's a tablet. It's really, you know, so it's a very small, thin form factor, and so it, you know, it's very easy to, don't have to put it in necessarily in the bag like I would with a laptop. Of course, I always store the laptop, you know, when I'm done with the laptop, done using it, store it back in the laptop bag, and you have all these, you know, all these accessories and what have you. And with this, it's, you know, it's a much more svelte kind of device, and it's much easier to use. Don't necessarily have to plug it in because it's really great on battery life. And yet I've still got a 12-inch screen, and with the keyboard attached, it's it's a computer with a keyboard and a touchpad, and it's a real computer running real software. It's not just silly little apps, and yet I've also got a touch interface. So Microsoft is really onto something with this, and you have to, as I said before, I think in the last podcast, you really have to give Microsoft credit for the effort that they made with Windows 8. Now, of course, some of the Apple people are saying, well, this Microsoft had this vision of one desktop or one interface or one operating system to rule them all, and it just doesn't work because look at Windows Phone, and they kind of point to Windows Phone and think that the whole thing is a failure, you know, and kind of overlook the Surface. Well, I think, you know, that's fine. Apple can do whatever Apple wants. And Apple's fine. Microsoft is not a threat to Apple. Apple's got $200 billion in the bank, so they say, or at least in foreign countries, you know, off in foreign countries somewhere, they've got about $200 billion in cash. So Microsoft is really not a threat. So, but it's, I find it fascinating that a lot of the fanboys are kind of nervous. You know, and if this Microsoft, and they've even said it themselves, some of them, if this new Microsoft computer was an Apple product, they would just be raving like mad at what an innovative thing it is. And even some of them are anyway. That hinge on this the Surface Book, the hinge is really, that's really interesting. It's a kind of an interesting way of doing a hinge in a laptop. Kind of, it's never been done before. It's very innovative the way it works, and what it does, it seems to do extremely well. And it's just one of those things that people lust after, because it's quite unique in the way that thing works. And so there's a lot of people that are lusting after that Microsoft Surface Book. So I don't know. I don't really want a laptop. I'm more of a, at this point, I want a tablet that doubles as a laptop. And this is actually quite a good computing experience. It's powerful enough. It's got great battery life. It's great having a tablet that is also a real computer. And it, not only is it a real computer, but it's a touchscreen computer. You know, this thing, this Surface Book would be, or this Microsoft Surface Pro that I have, is probably about the size. I don't know how it would compare with a MacBook Air. But it would, you know, a MacBook Air would have a similar size screen. I think it's 12, maybe 11 or 12 inch screen, maybe, is what the MacBook, or if they still have the 11 inch version. This is at like 12.2 inches or 12.3 inches. I'd have to look it up to see what it actually is, but it's a very nice screen, super high resolution, and very impressive. I'm very just as pleased as I can be with this device. So anyway, I could keep talking forever. Let me go ahead and stop this, and I'm going to play Joel's comment. In the meantime, I'm going to move this Verizon air card maybe into the other room and see if I can get rid of that RFI interference. So here is Joel.
Hey Tom, it's Joel McLaughlin here. Hopefully you're doing well. You haven't responded on Voxer, so I assume you are. I saw on your YouTube channel you picked up, I believe you said you got the Surface Pro 3, I believe. I'm actually looking at getting the Surface Pro 4. I still really prefer using Linux, mostly because of the cost, and just I find that it runs better. However, I do video editing for my church, and the last few years I've been doing it with open source video editors, specifically OpenShot, a couple others I've been using, and I've just been dissatisfied with the quality of not the video I can produce with them, but just the software in and of itself. Probably the biggest problem with the Linux-based software isn't so much that people aren't developing software for what they are, but they're developing software for the itch that they want to scratch. And that means things that I need, like the video editing, if people are happy with the existing software, how it exists now, they're not going to continue to scratch the itch that's already been scratched. And so far, most of the Linux users' needs I've ran into with video editing seem to be limited. Just simple cuts, stuff like that. Maybe throw in a title or so. Me, I want to do far more with the videos I've been editing. So I'll have to share with you via email the video I did this year. This year, I decided to jump in and grab Creative Cloud. And that includes new versions of everything. And I really like the new version of Photoshop. Even includes Audition, which I haven't really played with. I really haven't recorded a podcast in about a year right now, over a year almost. And so I haven't really tried editing with Audition yet. although it will be shortly because I'm going to use Audition to record the voiceovers I'm going to do for my video, my YouTube channel. So I'm actually starting I started a YouTube channel last year, but I really didn't post that many videos. But I'm actually starting, I have actually footage filmed for a couple of reviews I'm going to do for the channel, with the first one being a local, my home, a bowling house. And that's the name of that playlist is going to be Bowling House, Lakeland, Ohio Bowling House Reviews. So, and I'm doing a whole bunch of different things. I actually created a short video explaining what I'm going to be doing with the channel and a relaunch. Of course, I haven't posted another video since that. That was about 2 weeks ago. So I'm hoping to get some of the video off the ground maybe today after work. But the one reason I'm looking at Surface Pros, though, I really, first off, I'd actually really prefer the book. But I think the book is just a little bit overpriced. Even then, me just getting a base or slightly upgraded Surface Pro 4 is going to probably going to also, I don't know if it's going to happen or not. I'm hoping. I want to try and talk to the wife and let me see if I can do that. I'd still keep my laptop, use my laptop. I kind of want the Surface Pro for when I'm down here working. I don't want to use my work computer to do just basic web browsing, non-work related web browsing. Work has actually provided me with a really nice Lenovo ThinkPad with 16 gigs of RAM. It's loaded for bear. It's a great machine, but I obviously don't want to use that for doing a lot of personal things. Plus, also, when I travel, I'd like to have a personal, not just a, I mean, I've taken tablets when I travel before. Those are great if I just want to watch a Netflix video in my room or something. But if I want to do something a little bit more, then I'm going to need something a little bit more portable than my 17-inch laptop. I can't take that and a 14 or 15-inch work laptop with me. It's not going to happen. So, but I can probably sneak in a 4-pound Surface Pro. So I'm looking at wanting to get one of those. So, and one of the things I'll probably do, and I have to also look at the Pro 4 and see if I notice the Pro 3 has a micro SD slot on the back. I'd want to also make sure that I can do the same thing with the Pro 4. Plus, I'd also bring with me I have a Western Digital terabyte hard drive. Probably buy another one of those before too much longer. Actually, I'd like to get like a 2 terabyte drive coming up soon because video takes a lot of storage. So, and I've been doing more and more videos. So I'm planning on getting the Surface Pro 4 and putting the full, well, really, actually probably a limited set of what I would put on my laptop so far as Creative Cloud goes. I'd only put things like Premiere and Photoshop, Lightroom and, just those kinds of things on the laptop. I may not even put Lightroom on there. I might just use Photoshop for doing the picture editing I want to do on there. But I just want something a little bit smaller when I travel. And I think the Surface Pro 4, or maybe even the 3, the 3 is not that bad. But I want to look at both once they come out. So, I'd probably get the type cover as well, just because it's nice to have that. Although I'd probably take along. I have a Logitech wireless mouse that I will take with me when I travel. I love using that mouse. That should work a little bit better. I have one of those Stream 7 tablets I picked up at Black Friday. But it's just too underpowered for doing the video editing. So I want something a little bit beefier. Oh, and I was listening to your latest podcast, which I just after I left that comment, I looked at my podcatcher. Oh, there it was. The one thing that I have noticed with the latest version of Creative Cloud, when you talk about that server, or that software, I should say, that actually, the real interesting thing with that is that basically with that, they've actually added touch features to it. So, and the only question that I do have, though, and you probably won't be able to answer this, is in the latest version of Photoshop, which is Creative Cloud 2015 or 2016, whichever version they're calling it right now, all I know is I have the latest. How would it support the pen? That's actually the really attractive thing about the new version to me, the new version of the Surface, that is the Surface Pro 4, is that the pen has basically variable pressure. So basically, is if you're drawing within an application and the application supports it, if you press down harder, the line would get thicker. If you press down lighter, it would be thinner, so on and so forth, which I actually would dig that, especially if we're drawing within Photoshop.
Okay, well, thank you, Joel. Okay, so you talked about several things there. Adobe Premiere, you're talking about the Adobe Creative Cloud that you subscribe to. What I ended up doing was purchasing Adobe Premiere Elements version 14. I don't know what version it was, but I bought a number of years ago, it was a package deal of Premiere Elements along with Photoshop Elements. It came on a CD, and this probably dates back, several years ago. And so, anyway, I ended up buying Premiere Elements 14, that's the latest version of Premiere Elements that they just released. Now, I may regret it. I didn't get Photoshop Elements because I've kind of, in recent years, I just haven't really found myself editing photos much beyond just a little cropping here and there, typically, and maybe fiddling a little bit with the brightness and the contrast and the color a little bit. So, haven't really, so I may end up regretting not buying Photoshop Elements with the package. But I did get Premiere Elements 14, and, I had become pretty familiar with Final Cut Express, if you remember that. Don't know if you ever used that or not. Final Cut Express worked quite a bit, so it has some real similarities to the way Premiere works. It's a linear editor. And of course, Apple, I think in 2011, completely just stopped developing Final Cut Express and stopped selling it. And that's when they really, we're going to have iMovie. We've got this new version of iMovie, and for whatever reason, some people just rave about iMovie and how wonderful it is, and at least on the Mac version, how easy it is to use. And I've always found iMovie on the Mac to be the new version, to be really a frustrating experience. And I just don't like it. I don't like the way it works. And I've not had very good, I just don't like the way it works. So it's, in any case, in the past few years, I've kind of gotten away from editing video. Now, the other problem, the Final Cut Express that I had, of course, that was back in the heyday, really, of the FireWire interface. And that Sony HD camcorder that I have has a FireWire interface. And so if you're going to capture FireWire from an HD tape format, then that's the way to do it. But in the meantime, all of the newer cameras have gone to compressed file formats, primarily, you know, kind of based around AV, what is it, AVCHD? And the Final Cut Express that Apple quit updating really wasn't set up to work with very well with those compressed file formats. And so if I really wanted to use those files that I'd recorded on newer cameras in Final Cut Express, then I would have to go through a kind of a lengthy conversion process, converting the files into what is Apple Intermediate Codec. AIC or Apple Intermediate Codec, you know, and you convert it and it would work fine. Now, of course, when I was capturing video from the video camera, as the tape played back, the digital tape, that was actually, there was a conversion process going on. It was capturing it in AVCHD format, Apple Intermediate Codec, AIC. It was capturing it. And so it was actually doing conversion on the fly almost. You could think of it that way. So Final Cut Express wasn't being updated. And I kind of got away from editing very much video. Doing some video on the phone, and that was about it. And so now this what I will say, this Premiere Elements... so far, every compressed file format that I've tried with it, it just loads it right up. It doesn't have to do any conversion process. And it seems to work really well. So far, I've tried it with the MOV files from my Nikon DSLR. Works great with that. And then I've also tried it with... just some experimental files from my phone. I had last night. I made it. I had a little 4K, little 4K clip that I took with my phone, and I copied that to the computer and brought that into Premiere Elements Pro or Premiere Elements 14. Too many pros. Premiere Elements 14, and it just brought it right in. It didn't have to import it or go through any kind of crap, and I was able to easily manipulate the file. And of course, Premiere Elements 14 will also output 4K video if you want it to. Now I'll do a little bit of experimenting with 4K, but it's, you know, and sometimes I'll upload little short things to YouTube, and I'll probably continue to do that even with the Premiere Elements. But primarily what I'm going to be uploading is going to be either 1080p or maybe even 720p to YouTube. And that seems to be good enough for YouTube, because in 4K, if people are viewing the thing on their mobile device, then 4K really is pretty much overkill. Even on this Surface Pro 3, is the screen resolution is close to 4K. This is very close to a 4K screen resolution on the Surface Pro 3. And even at that, I mean, it's a small screen with a super densely packed pixels. You know, you can't see with the naked eye, no matter, you know, you'd have to get a magnifying glass really to probably see them. But with just the naked eye, it's, you can't see the pixels anymore. And it's, you know, with a 4K picture, that's just, it will play just fine. And as I say, this is a near 4K resolution. The pixels are so, you know, the picture's too small and you just can't see there's more detail than you can see. You have to, in order to really appreciate 4K, you've actually got to blow it up pretty good. You know, you get like an 8-foot diagonal image at 4K. Now you're talking, because then you can begin to see the extra detail as opposed to 1080p or even 720p. But even at 55 inches, if you have a 55-inch diagonal screen, you might be able to tell the difference of 4K if you're really looking and doing a close, very close comparison. you might be able to see it, but then if once you kind of get across the room or something, you may or may not even be able to tell it, because even 720p can look very good. 720p, 1080p, and then you get to the 4K resolution, it really cries out for a bigger screen. But I will be experimenting with it. But so far, what I found is that I played with the trial version before I made the $99 purchase from Adobe's website. I downloaded the trial version, which actually is the version. They simply send you an unlock key and put that in, and that actually unlocks the software. I downloaded the trial version. I didn't have to re-download anything. But I did play with it for a while and make sure that I watched a bunch of YouTube videos. Excuse me. And I made sure that it had all of the features that I was really looking for, and it's close in operation and close in what it can do to the Final Cut Express that Apple stopped developing in 2011. So I'm very happy. I think I'm going to be very happy with Premiere Elements 14. And as I say, they it just so happened that they released it, I think, just a few days before I went looking for it. I think around maybe October the 3rd. So it's just a brand new release, basically. So I did get that, and I think I'm going to be, there's a learning curve to it, particularly with the animated titles and things like that. But I will continue to work with it. I did become fairly proficient with Final Cut Express. So the Surface Book, I think the thing with the Surface Book, it is probably overpriced, but it's got this technolust factor. You know, Apple has always been, if you think about it, they've always been really good at creating computers that and other devices, but that would cause people to sort of drool. Because the original iMac, it was so thin compared to other, and the computer was right in it was just in the screen. There was no separate box. And so this iMac was the cat's meow, and people wanted it. And kind of the same thing with the MacBook. MacBook Air, look how thin it was. And, they made it thinner and thinner and thinner to the point where it was just a keyboard and a screen, basically, and people wanted it. And so with this Microsoft, with this Surface Book and that hinge, and then the really innovative way that it, the screen will come off, and they call it a clipboard as opposed to a tablet. They're calling it a clipboard because it is kind of, it's not really a tablet per se. It's missing some things that are in the base, although you can continue to use it as a computer for about 3 hours because it does have its own battery in the screen. They're calling it a clipboard. But it's got the mechanism that it has, it's a so-called muscle wire, and it electrically charges this wire and causes it to release the release the top, but otherwise it's securely held on there. But that hinge reminds you of a roll top desk, one of those old roll top desks that would, you pull the thing down and it would cover the desk up and keep all the dust out. And so that's what that hinge sort of is reminiscent of. And so that is an iconic product. It really is. It's an instant icon. And so people will buy those because that's what people are drooling over right at the moment. And they're seeing that, you just imagine you go out in public and you've got your Surface Book and it's got that hinge and you're going to where is it that people go? Starbucks or whatever, or Panera Bread, and they've got their thing, they've got their Surface Book, and oh, look at me, I've got this I've got this thing that everybody's lusting after, and it's a very expensive, highly desirable piece of technology. So it has the techno lust factor. I'm happy with the actually the Surface Pro 3. I'm very happy with, and I'm sure I would be happy with the Surface Pro 4, but didn't really want to wait, and was able to save a little bit of money because it was at after the announcement that they'd announced the Surface Pro 4. So that caused Best Buy to kind of put a little extra sale on these. And so I got a, got probably, saved probably at least $150. Now, if I wanted to wait longer, I could have probably saved even more. But in any case, I'm very happy with what I have. Now, I did, since I'm talking about software, I did go ahead and subscribe to Office 365. Of course, that was preloaded, and with this, they get with the Surface Pro 3, they were giving you 1 month trial, free trial, and they were doing that anyway, I think, if you'd sign up for it. Now, and I guess with the Surface Pro 4, you're actually getting 12 months of Office 365, but I went ahead and subscribed to it. Just a single computer, and it's like, just under $70, $69 or something, $69.95 or whatever it was. And I've, I like Microsoft Word, and of course they keep the thing updated automatically, and I might make some use of perhaps Microsoft Publisher. I've had a copy of that in the past, and I kind of liked it, and occasionally I would play with Excel. I would do things with Excel, but primarily right now I use Microsoft Word. So Office 365, I think I'm going to be, I did go ahead and subscribe to it for a year. Let's see. So what else did you mention? You're talking about your mouse. I did go ahead and buy there's this Microsoft Arc mouse. And although I'm happy with this TypePad, the Microsoft TypePad that I bought, and it's got the trackpad. I'm happy with that. Glad to have the mouse action, but editing video with the trackpad is a little can be a little challenging. It can be done, but it's sort of tedious, and it's kind of makes the if you're trying to be really precise, it makes it it's a more tedious. Experience. So I did go ahead and buy this Microsoft Arc mouse, and that's kind of cool. Now the version that I have has a USB dongle that you've got to plug into the USB port, but the way this thing works, you flatten it out because the thing is it's bendable basically. So if it's flat, it's in the off position, and you can store it. And the thing's flat, but if you bend it. When you bend it and make the handle kind of into an arc, then it's more kind of shaped like a traditional mouse, and it turns on and it instantly pairs with the dongle, and so it's kind of a cutesy mouse, and so I don't need it all the time. Like right now, I don't really need it, so I don't have it hooked up, but. It's there if I need it, and primarily where I'll use it is when I'm kind of editing video. That's really where I'll be putting that Microsoft Arc mouse to use. You were talking about storage. Now, what I'm doing with this machine, I've kind of gotten in the past. I was using the computer a lot, the laptops that I would have and the desktop machines that I would have, I was using those as storage. And in recent years, of course, the price on external, those giant external hard drives has just gone down and down and down. And so in the meantime, I've kind of gotten away from, especially with using mobile devices, I've kind of gotten away from using the device as storage. or even computers as storage. I've sort of gotten away from that, and so I've I'm storing things on these big external hard drives, and kind of moving it through the cloud, as it were. So what I've done so far with this machine, everything that I've done with it, I've pretty much moved off to the cloud, or I've moved to the have that MyCloud drive at home, moved the stuff off, and keep it off of the computer. I'm not going to let it accumulate. And so far, I've really only got applications on here that I'm actually using. I'm not going to just put willy-nilly put stuff on there just because I can. That's stupid. Because you end up kind of junking things up, whether it's a computer or a phone or whatever. You should only put on there what you're actually going to use. Now, the other thing you mentioned was the Creative Cloud, the Adobe Creative Cloud, adding in support for touch. Microsoft did mention that in their, if you watched their keynote where they announced the Surface Pro 4 and the Surface Book, they did mention the that Adobe Creative Cloud had added support for touch. So I would assume that that also means that they've added support for you're adding support for that pen. That would be my assumption. Now, I might be wrong, especially if you're, what is, they have Adobe Illustrator, and I think that's probably part of that Creative Cloud. So that Adobe Illustrator, I could see where they would probably, with Illustrator, if you're using that, they would certainly be able to put to use all of those different pressure sensitivities that Microsoft, especially the new version of the Microsoft Pen, or whatever, the stylus, or whatever they're calling it, Microsoft Pen, the one with the eraser. I think it had, 1,024 levels of pressure sensitivity, something like that. So I would imagine that, and then you get the different tips that you can put on there that gives you, that simulate different, like a felt tip pen or a ballpoint pen, or maybe even more of a brush type of, give you a brush type of simulation. And I'm surprised someone hasn't tried that before. Because that's, why not? You're on glass, and instead of having just the single, like a piece of plastic, kind of going across the glass surface, you can put other, you can begin to simulate other, because you're using it as a virtual pen or a paintbrush. So why not begin using the correct materials? You put the tip on there, and then you can simulate the feel, let's say, of a felt tip pen, or more of the feel of a real ballpoint pen, or the feel of a, I guess they could simulate the feel of a paintbrush, perhaps. So I'm surprised no one's done that before. But it's interesting, Microsoft has, people have, I think especially under Steve Ballmer and Bill Gates, and then Steve Ballmer, they just kind of wrote Microsoft off and thought, well, it's just going off in the sunset. And even though they're still making billions of dollars, they don't innovate. There's no innovation coming out of there. And we can make, whatever they do, they're just around so we can make fun of them. Well, I don't think that's the case anymore. This Satya Nadella, this new CEO that they've had for the past couple of years, has really made it. It's obvious he's really made a tremendous difference with Microsoft. And they're doing things that Apple, these are the kind of things that Apple used to do. Apple used to really inspire techno-lust. And I don't think they're doing it anymore. But Apple's not going to go anywhere. And you still have the fanboy base. It's a huge fanboy base. And they still have a lot of users that are sort of coincidental that could end up going back to Windows, like I did. There are people that could, because there's not everybody's a fanboy. There's just people that are using the stuff because that's kind of what, you know, it's kind of popular or whatever, or they just are kind of the fan of the technology and kind of go where the innovation is. And now it would seem that the innovation is kind of, it's back in Microsoft. And these are the kind, you know, Microsoft is making the kinds of moves and product announcements that, you know, that used to, you would expect Apple to be doing, and Apple's not at this point. So, but as I say, you know, Apple's got billions and billions of dollars in the bank, and their forte is, at the present moment, is the iPhone, and so far they're continuing to be successful with the iPhone. And so now if something ever happens to the iPhone, they've got a problem. So far so good. They're doing well with the iPhone, and they're really isn't a competitive threat coming from other companies or even from Android, as far as from, you know, the top end that Apple is in, the top end of the phone business where all the profits are. Apple has that sewn up for the moment, but it's one thing you've got to remember about the cell phone business. Within 36 months, you can go from being on top. And it's happened more than once, and it certainly happened with BlackBerry. You can go from being on top of the world 36 months later to has-been. And that happened to BlackBerry. And I think it's happened to some, you know, Nokia is another one that it happened to. As well as the, you know, Windows Phone, although Microsoft didn't make a phone back in those days. But you had Windows Phone, and that had that, at one point, probably 2004, 2005, or certainly 2003, 2004, Windows Phone was dominating about 30% of the smartphone market. And in just two or three years, that was all, it was evaporated. It was all gone, except the crying, basically. So it can happen. No signs that it's going to happen to Apple at this time, but as I say, you just never know. And I think we're really to the point now where the phones have kind of turned into a commodity. And I really don't see, you know, although, you know, I could be proved wrong, but I really don't see what, you know, the form factor of the phone is not going to change. The smartphone is the ultimate. It really is kind of the ultimate convergence device. And I think, you know, the size is the size, because it can't be too small and it can't be too big, because it's got to be able to fit into the pocket, and you've got to be able to interact with it, you know, with the touchscreen and what have you, and plug things into it and do things with it. So the form factor is the form factor. And so I think the thing is in danger of really turning into a commodity item, and I think it really has turned into a commodity item in large part on the Android side. And the same thing could well happen on the Apple side, on the iOS side. So, you know, the iPhone, you know, what are they going to do next? You know, how are they going to, pull something off to get people to spend that money all over again? That's an ongoing question that they've got to answer constantly. Because if they don't, within 36 months, they could be in real trouble with it. But they got $200 billion in the bank. So as long as they don't go crazy with spending money, they could last years and years and years and kind of coast if they wanted to. So anyhow, I think I'm going to go ahead and cut this off. Hope everyone is having a great weekend, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.